Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, Halima.
Hi, Ione.
And hello to all of you wonderful listeners. Welcome to the Polyester Podcast. I'm Ione. I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of Polyester. I'm also the author of Poor Little Sick Girls, which comes out next fucking week.
Woo-woo. And I'm Halima, the community editor of Polyester Zine and the co-host of the Polyester Podcast.
This is The Sleepover Club, a feminist pop culture podcast. We pull apart the hashtag discourse in the hope of making some sense of it all.
Before we get started, please like, rate, review, and subscribe. This week we have a review from the lovely Gemma from our Instagram DMs. Gemma says, I can't leave a review on the pod this week on Spotify, but I want to say that my life is better since finding the Polyester Podcast.
Aww.
That the way being a hater is so much fun, Ep. Spoke to my soul and I've considered it a personal birthday present from you guys. It's fucking excellent to hear relevant takes that aren't just an echo of the Insta-branded feminism that seeps into so many conversations. You guys just get it. It's a genre and you girls are firmly on my podcast roster.
I hate that TikTok sound, but I love her.
I love you, Gemma.
It's a genre. I hate it.
I didn't realise it was a TikTok sound.
Have you not? It's like, the only reason I hate it is because I saw our least favourite RuPaul's Drag Race girl do a video to it. and it is like, it's a bad, it's genre. It's a genre. Oh, I hate it.
Okay, okay. This is me and Ione's second time recording this intro. What are you, transparent?
Oh my God.
We were having technical difficulties.
We were, but we're back, baby.
We're back, baby.
But yes, I love that review so much. Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks, Gemma. Guys, please review us. We love reading them on the podcast. Review us on Spotify and Apple TV, whatever it's called.
Apple TV? Apple Podcast. Someone give us an Apple TV show.
What are we talking about this week, Ione?
We are talking about the cult of confidence feminism.
Yeah, we are. This is my idea.
Yeah, what's your idea?
Snaps for Halima. I was reading a book by Catherine Angel. Firstly, I love her name. Catherine Angel's a gorgeous name. But it's called Tomorrow Sex Will Be Good Again, Women and Desire in the Age of Consent. And the book is all about this idea, because I guess like a few years ago, especially with Tumblr feminism and Twitter feminism, people were talking about consent and the importance of speaking up during sex and knowing what you want, especially as a woman. And I guess it was really attributed to feminism as well. Like, I think it links to like what you were talking about before about women being sex positivity on Tumblr as well. I think it links to that genre as well. But this idea that women need to know what they want and know how to say yes and no when it comes to sex. But the book is investigating the possibility of women not knowing what they want and not knowing what they desire. And the links it has to like sexual violence, stuff like that. But yeah, okay, so the book, I found the book really interesting. I haven't finished it because it's quite academic, but there was a quote that I loved. There's two quotes I loved from it. And one of them is, being outspoken, it would seem, is a requirement of any self-respecting feminist. If you're not talking loudly about gutsiness, are you even a feminist? And another one goes, if confidence is the new sexy, then insecurity is the new ugly. It's this hierarchy of feeling helpful.
I love that. Insecurity is the new ugly.
Ugly! Pow, pow, pow! So I got those self-help shit. Like, insecurity is ugly.
It's so interesting as well to see that. Right, okay. Because you can see that play out in the real world, like, right? So women don't know you pretty, like, What Time to Be Alone, like, any of these books that came out a few years ago, whatever. Like, definitely really, like, push this confidence feminism thing. We'll go into it a bit more, like, broadly in feminism, but in terms of sexual desire, it's so interesting because, traditionally we've been taught that, like, men, if we're talking about, like, you know, hetero relationships, that men don't really like confidence. Like, they do, but only if it's in this very specifically packaged way that's, like, coy and, like, perfect and all of this. But B, how there's, like, a very real backlash with, like, the male incel movement going on, in which, like, they are saying women are too confident. We need to, like, you know, that's the reason I don't get any girls, because, like, the women have feminism and they're too confident now. like, I think it's really complicated and nuanced, and obviously we have so many different strands to it, even just when we're talking about sex in our culture. And none of it actually gets to the bottom of, like, the root of this thing, where it is women should know what they want and should know what they don't want. Because, like, personally, I would say that, like, the way we consume ideas around sex is still very confused and convoluted. There's no, like, real simple way, whether it's at an educational sex education in education level or a social level, that actually provides women with these tools.
That is so true. Even thinking about, like, our sexual education, there's nothing there that teaches you to understand your sexuality or sex in general, or how it's meant to feel, or especially when TV's idea of, like, sex and women is, like, women are there as a, like, they're there to be used in a way, or like, women are giving somebody sex for something else. I don't mean that in the terms of prostitution, but even in the terms of, like, of emotional value, if that makes sense. I think that's for a lot of women, that's what sex feels like. So this idea that, especially with the whole consent talk that was around a few years ago, I remember I had that conversation really impacted my schooling. And when I was in secondary school, we had a whole consent assembly, because that was what people were talking about at that time. And this idea of knowing exactly what you want, when, again, we're not given those tools to know what we want.
It's so interesting, because I don't know if it's, like, just a few years between us or whatever, in that, like, for me, the consent conversation has always been framed around, like, the boy has to ask for consent. Like, it's the boy's job to establish consent, not the girls to make sure it's known, if that makes sense. Like, not in a bad way, but not in a way that I'm saying, like, girls shouldn't assert, but as in, like, the conversations being like, boys, you need to make sure the girl knows it, like, that you know this about the girl, as opposed to, like, a girl being, as opposed to speaking to women or young women or any type of women about, like, this is how you assert yourself, or, like, this is how you make yourself heard or seen.
But even when I think, but because the conversation I was having when I was younger, or even, like, the conversation I see now, is very much like, but did you say no? But did you say yes?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. There's that, but as in, like, when we're talking about, like, proactive consent, I feel like it's not like, this is how you say what you want or what you don't want. It's always like, boys, did you get it? Do you know what I mean?
See, I didn't have that. Well, yeah, I think I saw that a little bit more when I went to sixth form, because I went to an all boys school.
Did you?
My sixth form was all boys, but then so the sixth form wasn't all boys. Like, the lower school was all boys, but the sixth form was mixed. But my secondary school was mixed. It was all mixed. And the secondary school conversation was more, everybody should know what they want. Like, girl, boy, know what you want and say it. When we had our questions about consent and sex, but then when it came to being in my sixth form, it was very much boys, make sure that you know what, like, the way that this conversation is going between you and this girl, blah blah. But yeah, I just found the conversation interesting, because even, like, removing it from sex, because the book talks about confidence feminism, and I was thinking when I was reading it, I just found it really affirming, because when I was younger, I will say that I was really confident growing up, but schooling ruined my confidence completely. So a lot of my confidence was taken away. But then when I discovered feminism, it felt very much like I had to be this confident person that I used to be, to speak up and you know, to, like, put my politics where my mouth was, to make sure that I was adhering to these things that I believed in. And it very much, it felt like a internal issue, because I worked, either I was shy or I didn't know what to say, or I wasn't as educated, but it still felt like I had a responsibility to be this gutsy feminist woman and never have any fears. So I always felt really conflicted when I was younger, because I knew that that wasn't the reality of the way I felt, but it didn't feel like that's what feminism was. It felt like feminism was never having fear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I feel like for me, there was kind of this, like, moment, like a flicker, of which, like, I felt like I could be confident in that way that you are saying. Like, for example, I'd like, you know, shout down catcallers on the street. Like, when a uni lecturer like did something gross to me, I like called him out straight away, like that kind of vibe. And I feel like that moment for me was literally like 18 to 20. Like, I feel like that's kind of the golden age for these, in my experience, for these types of things. Like, you discover feminism and suddenly like no one can tell you shit about shit. Like, you can shout things down. And then suddenly, like, the real world starts to creep in and you're like, oh, well, what if I shout out a catcaller and then they come over and punch me in the face? Like, or what if I do this and then this happens? And, like, slowly that confidence is chipped away from you, I feel, in a way that you just, like, don't have when you're 18 and, like, everything's a bit, like, everything's available to you and you feel like you can't, like, die or be in danger, basically.
I had, like, the same thing, because I guess this whole conversation with confidence feminism is that it puts the responsibility on the person. So it's like, if you are confident, you can change things. Yeah. And like, it just puts it all on the one person. I remember this quite vividly when I was in sixth form. I called out my sixth form for being having an unconscious bias. I hate that term, but, you know, I had to use particular words to not get in trouble.
Right.
And me and my friend Ollie, shout out to you, Ollie, one of the only other black people in my year, wrote a letter and we got called into my deputy, like the head of whatever. We got called in the next day for writing this letter. And I was really scared to write the letter in the first place. But I was like, I need to do this. I need to make sure that I'm speaking up and I'm using my voice and I'm supporting whatever, blah, blah. And Ollie did it with me. We sent it in. And she called us in and I was feeling really confident. I had the letter I had written to her, and she completely tore me the fuck down. It was very much like, how dare you call the school racist? Like, how dare you say that you only feel supported by a few of these teachers here? Like, these are serious allegations, blah, blah, blah. And I remember being like, feminism didn't tell me that this would happen. Feminism did not tell me that this woman would absolutely destroy me in front of my friend and leave me crying. Like, I didn't realize that was, I thought me being confident and me doing what I was doing with my friend would result in something
bigger.
Better. I thought that me having confidence would, I don't know, fix the, like, just me speaking up would fix the problems that my school had, like, systematically, when that's not the fucking reality.
Oh my god, this is so interesting. So, lol, I write about this in my book.
Plug.
but it's kind of convoluted, but I feel like it actually does tie in. So I basically have written a chapter, obviously, about wellness and, like, the kind of, like, toxicity around wellness in our current culture. And I feel like confidence does feed into that, because it's like,
absolutely,
you can only be confident if you're healthy, if you take the right supplements, if you do the right exercise, if you have the right athleisure, whatever. Anyway, and it feeds into, like, our very individualist attitude about this. So confidence feminism relies on, like, the fact, which I also speak about in another part of the book, that you can, like, basically claw your way out of your own oppression through the right mindset. So healthism was this thing that was established by a theorist, I can't remember his name, you can buy the book to find out, in the 80s, to kind of summarize this, like, our move towards health in society as being like the moral signposting of our lives, which I think is still very true. But it said basically the reason why there was a huge swing towards health in the 80s was because during the 60s and 70s there were obviously so many political movements, like, you know, civil rights movements, feminism, everything, basically, like, even like stop the war stuff, all of this. People saw that it basically didn't do anything, so then they turned to healthism to self-optimize, like, out of their own, like, this disappointment of the world not changing around them. So we've established, like, literally for 40 years now, this kind of method of, like, you can't change the world, but you can change yourself.
Yeah.
And this same theorist, and I write about it in my book, like, basically found, like, looked at research and all of this kind of stuff, and it's been found through research that it's a very middle class mindset, which I think can be reflected in, like, the people that write about or talk about
or
peddle this on social media. So middle class people are more inclined, like, innately more inclined to think that if they've done something good, or, like, solved a problem, or, yeah, become healthier, whatever, they've done that because of, like, themselves, like, they've kind of manifested that happening. It's a very middle class mindset, whereas, like, working class people will always see it as, like, a community effort or something that cannot be solved by the individual. And, like, outside of class, I mean, specifically to class, but especially when class intersects with, you know, like, other marginalizations, whether it's, like, disability, race, gender.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Weight, like literally sexuality, anything. It's like we are literally just been sold this lie that, yeah, if you say you're confident or if you say you like sex or if you say that you know what you want, then everything will disappear. Yeah. So like it's the not the perfect example because obviously awful that happened, but like that's something that's happened to me so many times in my life as well. Like you go in like the righteous feminist being like, yes, I'm gonna change something.
The world. Yeah.
And then these people are like, get the fuck out. Why are you talking to me like that? Like I have more power than you.
Absolutely.
Like confidence doesn't give you power in anything. Like what I was kind of saying at the beginning about how like men don't like confident women. Because we've been taught that confidence is power. Like even with like the girl boss, like feminism of like Audrey Gelman and like all these women that were like very confident, maybe in politics, like politics adjacent, like even like fucking Hillary Clinton, whatever. Like, yeah, confidence will get you where you want to be. Until it actually doesn't change a fucking thing and you're just left being like, well, why did I bother?
This links so well because I was thinking about this earlier when I was speaking to Gina and I was asking Gina, like, how do I hack this website? Because I need to read the article because it's paywalled. And it was the cut and it was Tavi's article about Britney. And where did I go? I put my head some notes on it. And where was it gone? If you haven't read Tavi's article, it's excellent. It's called, where's it gone? It's called
Britney Spears was never in control.
Yeah. Why did I ever believe a teen girl could hold all the power?
Yeah.
And there's something that's really important that she mentioned. Yeah. She goes, among all this trauma, Spears is mine and any woman who grew up in the 90s and the early aughts, I can see why a viewer would find relief in concluding that Spears was always in complete control. But it is absurd to discuss her image from that time as though there was not an apparatus behind it, as though she existed in a vacuum where she was figuring out her own sexuality on her own terms, rather than in an economy where women's sexuality is rapidly commodified until they are old enough to be discredited. And it just makes me think of exactly what you said, like that people, there's this illusion that confidence equals power, when in actuality, there's this whole idea, and she mentions it in reference to the Britney Spears documentary that asserted that she was confident and she had power and she was sexy, and that's why people hated her so much, because of her confidence and her power, when in reality, like, what power did Britney Spears really have?
Powerless,
she had no fucking power in that construction of her identity as a teenager. But there's this idea that confidence equals power, or that confidence is what will fix everything, when that isn't the reality of the situation for lots of people.
And also I feel like this is why people are, because obviously like girl boss feminism is the latest iteration of it, and Lean In, the Sheryl Sandberg book, is like a, what do you call it, like a tome for girl bosses. But it's like, I've completely forgotten my point. Oh, so basically, like, you know, girl boss feminism, all of the lean in works on the assumption that, you know, if you just break the glass ceiling, then that's your work done and somehow like structural inequality will fix itself. But like it doesn't consider, okay, so you get a seat in that boardroom, you get to the top of a company, blah 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 blah. You're still dealing with people all the time that like fucking hate who you are on a fundamental level. B, power corrupts, and then you're going to be a cheater for everyone below
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Like, oh, I feel like this whole idea that, like, confidence will get you power, get you to a certain place or whatever. Like, a lot of these people who, as you were saying, endorse this ideology, these middle-class people, like, this article I was reading mentioned it. I think Catherine Angel mentions it in her book as well, with Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, Serena Williams, like, all these people who ascribe to this kind of, like, be vulnerable, self-compassion, radical acceptance. Like,
also, I'm not being funny, but on that be vulnerable thing, I remember this like slightly in your research, but like it's so funny how, yeah, this like be vulnerable and like, you know, the confessional social media posts, whatever, project in our like day and age law a innate confidence, like you're confident in the fact you don't care that other people know you are mentally ill, or other people know that you don't like your body, or other people know you feel rejected or whatever. When really it's not confidence. Like I don't have any more like intellectual thoughts apart from that. Like it's not confident. Being vulnerable isn't confidence to me.
I think it's confidence.
I don't know. It's such a tricky one.
I think
in a way, like I feel like confidence is just something that like it. Confidence and bravado, right? These are the two different things. Like I would say, I have confidence in a way that like I often don't recognize in myself, but if anyone would speak to me, like if anyone would describe me, they'd probably call me confidence. Like I have a podcast, like I have a book of all, like literally my whole life and shitting myself in public. Like I have all these things where you'd say I'm confident, but I don't think I have the bravado to believe in myself that I am confident, if that makes sense. Like I second guess everything I do, blah, 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 blah. Whereas like, a lot of these women and people, they have confidence, but they also have the bravado to like pull it off. Like they can bullshit, basically.
And I guess like even to say, I don't want to just say that they're like confident and have bravado. I think that a lot of these women are just lucky. Like, let's just be honest. Like,
yeah, but that's what bravado don't... is. Like bravado.
Oh, is it?
Like, well, what I mean by bravado is like they're faking it till they make it. Kind like they're lucky. They're not faking it because they believe they're in bullshit. So they don't. They're not aware they're faking it. But I feel like that's what holds so many other marginalized people back from different communities or like. Working classes or, you know, anything, because they're like, oh, I'm faking it and everyone else fucking knows I am. Whereas these women are like, I could be faking it, but who the fuck cares? I'm getting what I want.
Yeah. All these women, like people like Serena Williams or like Melinda Gates or Michelle Obama or like Hillary Clinton.
I literally have no idea who Melinda Gates is. Like, I know she's Bill Gates' wife. That is as far as it goes with me.
She's very much like, women can achieve anything if they just believe and if they have confidence. Like, these are women who are middle class or fucking who are just lucky. Like literally Hillary Clinton is a prime example of that. She has that book that's like the book of gutsy women. Like she, her whole like brand is that like you can inspire the next generation of women to be confident, then they can just achieve all they've ever desired without thinking about like the systematic inequalities that stop women from achieving things.
Yeah, I think we've built like a really toxic culture in that regard where we like elevate a single woman up who is like usually white and always middle upper class, like always able-bodied, whatever, in the way that like these women are built up and then they are suddenly like, I have all the secrets and I will tell them to you in my autobiography or in my TED talk or whatever. And that just reasserts individualism in that we think that like one woman holds like the key, not to like power or wealth or anything, but to like knowing how to be your best self.
I also think that we mythologize. What's the word?
Mythologize
them. Because Gina and Eden tagged me in a TikTok of Jane Fonda last week. And the TikTok of her was like, it was just this audio of like, who do you want to be when you grow up? Whatever. And this girl was like, Jane Fonda? Like, she's confident. She didn't give a fuck. Like, she fought for her rights, blah, blah, blah. And it was interesting to watch the TikTok because it was like, I've watched her documentary, so I'm basically an expert in her life.
Okay.
And I know for a fact that Jane Fonda was not confident about any of the decisions that she was making around the time where she was protesting against the Vietnam War or speaking up about all these things. She was making lots of mistakes while she was doing it. And she was incredibly nervous and anxious about doing all of those things, even though she knew it was right. Mm. I think we create kind of like this, and I guess it links to celebrity. We really create a false image of these certain women acting like they don't have any insecurities. I guess
Jane Fonda like they never, just like float on clouds.
Exactly. And, like, they are never scared of anything.
Yeah.
They're full of confidence. And for example, Jane Fonda has, especially in documentary, she never said that. She was very clear about the fact that she was scared about what she was doing, but she still had to do it. Mm-hmm. We really do create this false, unattainable lens around confidence. But in actuality, these people you think are confident really aren't confident. And the people who make money off of it are feeding you a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What do I have to say?
It's fun. I just love the conversation because, again, it was something where I felt like I was betraying feminism when I wasn't a confident person.
Sorry, I did actually have another stand to this thread. I think it's interesting, kind of like on the vulnerability thread that I said as well, like to me, vulnerability is not power. I suppose it's because what we said about in the is vulnerability a trap thing, in that like vulnerability can more often harm than help you. Is maybe why we are seeing, which we have also spoken about in previous episodes, like the shift towards dissociative feminism or like a rejection of anything. Like displaying dissociative feminist traits on TikTok or Instagram is to basically be like the opposite of a confident feminist. Like it's to say, I don't have it all together. I'm like fucked in the head and I look like shit. Like it's basically the opposite of everything. So like I'm not endorsing that either. And like this cynicism as well, because it's like I say this in my book, I find it just like overall very like cheesy. Like the fact that we take these girls and these women seriously as basically like essentially new age life coaches, when if this was like a white man in a boxy suit in the 80s in like a church in America, you would say, what the fuck? Like you're selling me into a cult.
Mm. Because it is the cult of confidence.
But I mean, so I think we're definitely seeing a rejection to that. And I don't think that like either extreme, like I feel like saying either extreme just like invokes the arguments by like Piers Morgan of the far right and far left, which is not what I mean. But like, I don't think taking just like a wholly individualist approach or a wholly dissociative approach is good. And like how do we teach people confidence, because I do think it is important to be confident and like to be able to assert yourself, but my issue with it is that like I suppose it's like the confidence gap more than the confidence cult. Like the people that have always been confident get more self-assured, gain more power, where the people that have been least benefited from like using confidence just completely get chipped away at. Like what I was saying, in the end, like real life takes hold and you're like, this doesn't benefit me to be outspoken.
Yeah, I don't know, it's tough. I think that education is the key. I don't know, it's tough, because even in the research I was doing, this lady wrote like a little list of why particular women aren't particularly confident, and she was talking about like what I was saying basically before about my teacher like yelling at me when I spoke up. There is a teachers do pick particularly on children of color, and it really does ruin their confidence from a really young age. Like these kids who come into school confident do leave school, particularly British schooling, really just not as themselves. So I don't know, it's difficult. I think confidence is incredibly important. I just don't like the idea that confidence is used to like put blame on people, to blame people for not achieving things, to blame people for not getting things, that like when there's real life reasons why these people can't achieve things. Like it's not just their fault. I don't like that when it comes to confidence, but I think of course confidence is important.
Well, it's basically that we've just made confidence like a commodity rather than an actual emotional way to live your life, or like thing that can be practiced and like honed in on. It's like, but in a healthy way, not in a like, you're confident if you go and tell your boss you need a raise.
Did you ever buy one of those confidence books?
No,
they're really sold to women.
No, I never did.
I did once.
What one?
It was this one, but it might be in my shed now. I don't think I have it out here. It was
in your shed, absolutely thrown in the bin.
It was by this random white woman whose name I can't remember, and it was about the confidence of like speaking in person, because I never liked to. I struggle to do this podcast because I don't like the sound of my own voice. But I remember getting it, thinking this will change me. And again, I haven't opened it. I tried to read a bit of it, but I thought it was bullshit. The beginning is like this quote from Hillary Clinton. I was like, fuck, I've wasted about £10. But yeah.
Oh, fair enough, love. All right, well, we are at our time. What do you think about confidence? Tell us.
Yeah, tell us what you think, guys.
Next week, we got a special episode.
Yeah, I'm interviewing Ione Gamble about her book.
Dun, dun, dun.
Boom, boom, boom. If you have any questions, send them in.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to know about Ione's book, let me know.
Yeah.
I'll ask her. I'll grill her.
Okay.
It'll be an expose.
Oh, my God. My reckoning. My cancellation is coming.
Indeed. It's pending.
Well, thank you, Lima.
Thanks, Ione.
Thank you to Olivia for editing, to Gina and Gina, Eden, Charlotte, Hattie, Grace.
Bye!
Bye-bye!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.